Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North. If you use energy-efficient LED light bulbs in your home, you partly have Chuck Svoboda to thank. He spent 16 years as chief executive officer of Cree Incorporated, a company that helped bring LED lighting to the market. Svoboda says he's not done exploring innovation. He recently became Marquette University's first innovator in residence. He has a book coming out titled The Innovator Spirit, and he has a podcast at Marquette called Innovators on Tap. We wanted to know more, so we asked WUWM's innovation reporter Chuck Kornbach to talk with Svoboda. He began by shedding some light on how LED bulbs began.
You know, Cree was around for a long time before we made LED lighting a reality. When I started, it was a small startup, about $6 million in revenue, 30 people, and it would grow to $1.6 billion. But at one point, we knew we had an LED that we thought could make a light bulb, but no one was doing it. And we had actually planned to just sell the LEDs to the light bulb companies and let them make this happen. And after a couple of years of being really frustrated, a scientist showed up in my office one day and he said, "I know you said not to work on this, but I did it anyways. I'm sick of waiting." And he shows me a prototype of an LED light bulb. And when I look at it, I realize we got to do this because you could just get it, right? You looked at it and go, that's what it's supposed to look like. And the big innovation was actually that he made it look like a regular light bulb. You know, so often we think of technology as this really complicated thing. He had simplified it. It looked like a light bulb. It worked just like a light bulb. And when you screwed it in, it worked with your dimmer. It did all the things people expected. And that was kind of an aha for me that so often we think of innovation as this really complicated idea. And no, it's actually simplifying it so that the customer just gets it.
Some executives might have said, "How dare you have worked on that on probably on company time or off company time," and said, "We're squelching this. Why did you go ahead?"
Well, the company was started by five founders. It was built on innovation, right? It was the culture. It was the mindset of the employees. As much as, you know, management might say do this or do that, they were more motivated to do the right thing. And I think, you know, the ultimate purpose of what we did every day is solve hard problems. That's what motivated people. And when you see someone come in with a great idea, that's what we were there for, right? That's what makes companies great, or great ideas, not what you said to do or not said to do.
Other managers go along with it. I mean, sometimes it takes a whole company to accept an idea, not just the top person, but that wasn't necessarily the case at Cree, is that right?
Right. So at the time, Cree's about a $1 billion company. We actually make commercial lighting fixtures, but there's really nothing for the consumer. And when I saw it, one of the things we realized was the company, the larger company we had built, they could easily kill this idea. With all the process and all the rules and regulations and things that we did to make a product, this was an idea that really needed a much more innovative and creative approach. So when I saw it, we decided we were going to do it, but not tell anyone else. So literally, we took a team of five people led by one of the former founders of the company. He went and rented a warehouse, no name on the door. And they basically disappeared and started working on this in secret. And it took them about 12 months to invent it, to convince a customer, the Home Depot, to put it in all their stores, and to build a factory to make it. And we released it, I think it was about March I saw it for the first time. The following March is when we released it to the market. And probably less than 10 or 15 employees in the company knew the product existed the day we launched it.
Do you think that's typical innovation at companies, or is it more often the case that everyone's on board from day one?
I think what most companies try to do is bring everyone on board. But if you look at where do the big innovations come from, there's a reason startups work. Small teams focused on the problem. There's only one opportunity for success, right? There's no backup plan. They have to make it successful. How people think, how they're motivated, their incentives, that's a huge part of what makes innovation work. And so I think what happens is that in a large company, you try to replicate and scale that, and you're actually fighting human nature. You're fighting the people that you've hired to manage the business and run it and keep things under control and, hey, put this process in place so it's the same thing every time. I mean, think about innovation. You're trying to do something that's never been done before. How do you use a process to do something that's never been done? You can't. And so I think what we were trying to do is recreate that startup environment inside a larger company. And I think that's honestly, that's one of the big challenges for most companies today when it comes to innovation. And, you know, that's what one of the things I'm working on now is, how do you do it if you're in a larger company?
And you were an engineering graduate at Marquette. Did that help be on more on the side of innovation as opposed to bean counting, if you will?
I think being an engineer helps in a lot of different ways. Part of it is, you know, an engineering degree, to some respect, feels like they're making you sit there for 4 years and just solve problems over and over, whether they're real world problems or not. But it's that idea of seeing a problem, let's figure it out, and there's got to be a way to get to the goal. And I think that mindset was really helpful, and it helped me relate. I was not, you know, I worked with some of the most brilliant scientists in the world who helped develop the different products at Cree, but I could relate to their problem. And so they thought of me as the business guy, not as the engineer. But being an engineer, I think, made it easier for me to relate to their plight and help kind of guide things along.
You've talked about, in your literature, embracing risk and challenging the status quo. How important are those?
So one of the problems we have when it comes to innovation is that most of us are trained our whole lives to actually manage risk. In fact, an employee of mine one time described it as their whole career was manage or limit risk and deliver predictable outcomes. That's success. Well, if you want to pursue innovation, it's a function of the risk. It's kind of like, you know, you've seen those old charts from when you go to meet your investment advisor. How much return do you want? It's a function of risk. If you want to innovate, you have to take a lot of risk. It just doesn't work otherwise. And so I think it's a core principle of doing this. And as much as people say they want to do it, we're actually trained not to. So it's really critical to kind of get at that mindset.
There must be some criteria within that embracing risk. Is that right?
Yes and no. But I think the criteria are less formalized than you might think. The way we like to try to think about it is, we're going to focus on things where we think we can solve a problem and create value. So often what we talk about when it comes to innovation is it's just new. New's part of it. But that problem solving and creating value, that's the hard part. So when we're going to take risk, we're going to take risk with the idea that, do we really think it solves this problem and creates value? So the areas you're willing to take risk on are all to probe that idea. And what happens is you're going to try a lot of stuff that doesn't work. So many of us are trained to try to find the right answer, and we're not trying to fail when we're doing that, but you're not afraid of it. Because what you realize is, by trying something, whether you get a right answer or a wrong answer, you've learned something and you've gained knowledge. And at the end of the day, innovation is really about learning, because you have no idea really how to solve the problem when you start. You have an idea. You kind of want to be directionally correct, but then you start trying things and you have to be willing to learn. And I think it's really critical. If you're trying to be perfect, you'll never try the things you need to learn. And if you're afraid of what goes wrong, you're going to stop yourself before you test the really tough ideas. And so when we were taking ideas, if everyone liked it, it probably wasn't the right idea. You want to find something where some people like it and other people are uncomfortable. That's when you know you're probably on the right edge of that.
So with what you've learned in the private sector, you're now in the role at Marquette of the first ever innovator in residence. What does that title mean to you?
So it started out as a way to simply just, how did we do what we did at Cree? And how do we share this? And, you know, be honest, when they first asked me, I said, I don't know, we just did it. Like, it wasn't something I went in and thought about every day. So I spent the last couple of years in that role really trying to figure out. It started out with a book called The Innovator Spirit. And that was my ability to try to describe, what did we do and why did it work? And that's really the first time it became clear to me that it wasn't a process. It was really about the people and their mindset. And then if you get the right mindset and people that believe the right things to allow the right behaviors, you can do these amazing things. And if you don't, you have no chance. And so that's kind of where it started. And as I was working on the book, you know, in collaboration with Marquette, it was like, you know, we can keep going with this idea. And so it led to the Innovator in Residence role and the idea of starting a podcast to talk about not just my story, but, you know, innovation's happening all the time. So much we think of it as a tech sector thing. Innovation happens in nonprofits. It happens in just about every industry. The people that survive, it's happened in radio, right? If you don't innovate, you're not relevant anymore. And honestly, it's happening in higher education. And so for me, this is this great opportunity to take these ideas. And Marquette's like a living laboratory, whether it be with the students, with the faculty, and thinking about higher ed. And then the third piece is really, how do we bring it to Milwaukee and business people? We have this incredible city here that, if you look at the most famous companies, they're all started by innovators. but most of them were started 100 years ago. And so they're faced with this choice. Are we going to change and keep going? And hopefully sharing these ideas, we can kind of create that next generation of innovative leaders.
So do you teach a class in innovation? Do you coach students who come to you? What is your day-to-day role with students at Marquette?
So I spend part-time helping out with a course that's part of our Excellence in Leadership program, where we actually take students through a three-year program, undergrads, and we teach them about leading themselves, leading with others, and then the third year is leading innovation. And that's really where I get involved. And we're actually using both principles we found on the outside, but from the book. I'm a guest lecturer in that. I'm not the primary teacher. I'm learning, frankly, how to be more of a teacher than an executive. But I get to share my ideas with them. And honestly, their questions back keep me going. This isn't like an end point. Like this, for me, they've created this laboratory to keep testing my ideas. And so when I wrote my book, I had written a chapter about Thomas Edison and his role in innovation. And I was talking about it in class one day before it was finished. And I had a student challenge me saying, Edison's not a great innovator. Tesla was the innovator. And I said, I really don't know if I agree with you or not. But I went back, researched it, and actually changed the book because of it. So that's kind of my role with students. Then on the other side, you know, Marquette's sitting there and has these people thinking about this every day. But there's not an obvious connection for the companies and industry to talk there. And because my role's not exactly defined, I find myself taking two or three meetings a week, both inside and outside the universities, with people just saying, can you help us think about this?
Private sector firms, you mean?
Yes, absolutely.
So you're hoping to get some of these student ideas or some of the students into these companies eventually, right?
Yes, and it helps students start their own companies. And then the third piece is really help companies think about innovation differently. So if you work for a large company here, anywhere around the country, if you've had success, you've been promoted because of your ability to take on a task, deliver that task on time, on budget, and get the next one. And while those are great skills, those are really management skills, innovation is more of a leadership concept, which is quite different. And so what I'm trying to do with these companies is make them realize that if you expect your team that's all been built and promoted in this environment of following rules and delivering on goals to do things kind of outside the box, that's not going to happen. And so part of one of our ideas is, can we get these companies to bring some of their employees to Marquette? Let's do something together. And it's not because we have better ideas. We can create an environment where we can teach them that it's okay to push the boundaries, where they're not this reinforcement that you have to stay on track, you have to follow the schedule. We give them a chance to kind of test the limits and test failure and test this idea of risk so that once you learn that, you can go back. Because I think the thing we all forget is behaviors are a function of our beliefs, and beliefs are actually learned. So I can tell you what to do, but until you go through and experience it, and typically until you experience failing and surviving at it, you can't do it. And so we have to create an environment to do that. And if you live in a company that's only rewarding success, you can't possibly know what it's like to fail and persevere and to kind of keep being able to move forward.
So you talked a little bit about the companies that have been here 100 years. Do you see the innovative spirit growing in Milwaukee, at least slowly?
I see it starting. You know, I live primarily in Raleigh-Durham. That's where Cree was based. And 20 years ago, I came from Silicon Valley, and you'd say there was no startup entrepreneurial culture other than Cree and a few other companies. Today, there's this healthy environment. So one, I would caution people, it takes time, but I see the beginnings. And part of it is people that want to do this, right? I meet, especially I would say there is a younger professional out there that has this desire to do something different. They want to do what hasn't been done before. It starts there. I think we see some of the programs popping up around the city. What I don't think we have yet is really kind of an ecosystem approach. There's a lot of independent ideas. When this starts to work, it's these ideas become more connected. So the cool stuff that's happening at the Commons and the interesting things that might be happening at Startup Milwaukee are also connected to what's going on at MSOE and Marquette, that they're more integrated. And I think we're seeing the beginnings of that. But we really need an ecosystem, and because that's what it takes to get this momentum building and frankly, some success. You know, you have a few successful companies, they create more entrepreneurs and it builds over time. And I think that's one of the things we have to be aware of. But I think there's a desire, there's a need and a desire and an interest to make this happen. So yeah, I think it's going to happen.
Well, you talk about it, Marquette trying to broaden access to more students maybe that haven't had access to this line of thinking or effort before. Can you talk about that and then how that might help the ecosystem you'd like to see created? If you get a broader number of folks into an ecosystem, maybe that grows?
Absolutely. I mean, some of this is just you don't know what you don't know. If you think about these programs, you know, so many things we do with students in the high school areas are if you grow up in an inner city, going to an inner city high school, and you don't have a lot of connection with engineers and doctors, it's pretty hard to relate to that. Well, if you've never interacted with engineers or entrepreneurs or business people that really did just quit their good job and move across country to join a startup with a small family, and you say, well, they say, why would you do that? You said, well, I was more afraid of missing out on the opportunity of what could have been than what I had. People need role models. They need to believe these things are possible. So yeah, I think we're giving them access to the ideas and what's possible. And I think that's the way this thing starts.
Chuck Svoboda is Marquette University's innovator in residence. He spoke with WUWM's innovation reporter, Chuck Hornbach.